I've had such an unusual week this week that instead of my usual Saturday morning, what am I going to talk about anxiety, I had so many things to talk about that I don't know how to deal with it. That's very unusual for me. Usually, my week is not that contemplative, or I'm not dealing with issues that deserve questioning to such a degree, or, okay, it happens. It's not that it never happens. It does happen, of course. But and usually, it's not like that. Usually, things are pretty much the way things are, and one has to just make small adjustments. But this week I have found many interesting things, things that actually interested me. Honestly, not that many things interest me on the same level as have interested me this week. I'm interested generally in how to do what I do better, you know, technological advancement to improve things, or alternative sources of energy, or how to do things in a nice way for the sake of society, community, people, and so on. I've had these ideas that I want to do things that are basically good for humanity, for society. So I'm very curious and interested in these things. It always keeps my attention to research about health, to research about how people can improve their personal situations. Anything of interest in those fields always grabs my attention. And I always get into it. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about issues which reverberate deeply within. Now, as I explained last week, I think it was, I've been working on this book, which I actually started in the year 2000. Which started off as a transcription of lectures I had given, a series of lectures I had given in St. Petersburg, and which I then asked somebody to edit. And he did such a terrible job, it was very discouraging to fix it. So then I ended up rewriting major portions of it, but then gave it up sometime in near the end of 2003 when we moved to America. Since that time, it has been rewritten 4 times, and it no longer bears much resemblance to what it was then. And I'm just deepening it. As we mentioned last week, it's about the psychological and social implications of the way in which our living energy interacts with the world. And all of a sudden, I find myself, instead of being forced, so to speak, to finish something that I didn't have interest in, to now finding myself immersed in a topic that has fascinating repercussions, that has fascinating implications throughout the way in which I see life or life is seen in general. And even though now I'm more than halfway through the fourth rewrite, I'm finding it kind of hard to do it unless my mind is ready to do it, unless my mind is ready to accept the fact that I'm now entering into a text that is actually going to challenge me. I mean, it's easy to edit words just to make sure they're being spoken properly. But what I'm really doing now is editing concepts. And what I'm forced to do is to look at each statement I make. I don't usually do that. For example, here I am speaking to you off the cuff, as it's said. In other words, it's just improvisation. I'm just saying it. It's flowing. I really have, at this point, there's no script whatsoever. Even though, actually, believe it or not, I prepared 3 pages. 3 pages of notes. It's even funny that my previous lectures over the last 4 weeks were a product of one very small page of notes I had written for the first lecture. I only managed to cover 2 lines per week. Even though I thought originally that this one page wouldn't even cover 10 minutes of the first lecture. So I'm kind of looking at all these notes here, and they have no connection to me right now. So even though I had some idea, or I had some concept, or I had some understanding, at the moment, at this moment, it really is not important. So I'm seeing now that when I'm examining each and everything I'm saying, even here in this lecture, it has a totally different meaning to me than when I simply speak and move on to the next point. I'll explain that. It's easy to just say things and let things just flow. And you assume that the person who's listening understands what you say in the way you say it and the motivation you have when you say it. You assume this. We always do this. We always assume that naturally everybody will understand what we say. And because we assume this, all of us, when we are in the listening position, we don't want to question. We don't really want to say, stop, I don't understand that. Because what we do is we allow people to speak, and we figure if they talk long enough, eventually we'll get the point and we won't look stupid when we say, I don't understand what you're saying. So, when you're editing, this is a general rule, you really have to look at each sentence, which is very hard because that means each sentence has a start and a stop, which means you look at it and you just start your perception and stop it at the end of the sentence instead of allowing yourself to flow on with the words even if you don't understand what was just said. Because when you write, for instance, you have this, well, I have this tendency to just flow, just like I'm speaking now. Simply flow. Just keep flowing, and eventually concepts will arise. I don't, while I'm speaking, say, now I'm talking about this point. So focus your mind on this point, and we're going to discuss a little package called this point. I don't do it. Why don't I do it? Well, first of all, honestly, I don't have a point. Even though I'm talking about a point, I'm aware of it, obviously, because I continue it most of the time. Sometimes it flies away, but most of the time I do. I'm aware of it, but it's not really the point. In other words, it's not like an anchor that places the point as the focus. It's a transitory concept that allows the flow of what I'm talking about to move from this to this to this. And I am very aware that I'm painting a picture. It's not a two-dimensional picture. It's a multi-dimensional picture. I have my colors, my sounds, my moods, my feelings, my points that dot the canvas, this multi-dimensional canvas. And so I'm painting an image. And in this image, all of the listeners have a place. Each of you are part of the image. So I take a little of you over there and put you in there like this and expand. And I take you over there and put you like this and expand. And you mix in between, and the image expands with another, all the time from the point of view of my perception, my awareness. And so everything continues to flow. And at the end, you think, gee, he's talking to me. Gee, he's addressing something I was just thinking about this morning. Gee, he's speaking about the topics of my last week's understanding. So, in this particular lecture, I'm talking about the topic of questioning, examining. And therefore, it doesn't really have a point. I'm not going to be able to say, this is it. Just hear that, and you've got the, capitalized, solution, capitalized, exclamation point. You got it, now go with it. It's not like that. Actually, it never's like that. But Sometimes it seems that way. Now, this, when you're editing, is really important because you question, did that sentence say something? Sometimes I look at sentences and I say, you know, when I wrote it, it probably made a lot of sense to me. Right now, it doesn't make any sense to me. Or maybe it makes sense, but so what? I mean, like, so what? There it is. Some sentence. Starts with a capital letter, ends with a period. It's a sentence. Has a beginning and an end, a noun, a subject and a verb and an object and some adjectives, some adverbs, whatever. Phrases. It purports to mean something. Does it? Does it mean something? If I say, okay, it means something, then I say, well, is it clearly expressing what it means? If not, I change it. But then I look at it and I say, but is what it's saying worth saying in this context of this paragraph? And if it doesn't pass, I have to erase it, delete it. Deleting is hard. You have to admit this creation of yours, this thing that you put there stinks. It's not good. So you take it away. And you move on. You can't sit there and lament, oh my God, I wrote a bad sentence. Oh my God, I was stupid. Oh my God, I wasted. Oh my God. You can't do that. It's ridiculous. You'll never get past your first paragraph. You simply say, it stinks. It's just words. I got plenty of words. Out you go. If there's something worth saying, I'll say it again in another way, a better way, until I'm satisfied with it. Because if I'm not satisfied with it, how are you going to be if you read? I have to respect the reader enough to say, why should I throw at you words that I think are less than representative of myself? Why should I throw at you words that I don't even respect? I have to have respect for what I do. I have to have self-respect. I have to be able to look at what I'm writing and say, yes, that's good. Not that it's good enough. Good enough doesn't work. Okay, that's good enough for you stupid readers who don't know better. I can't do that. I can't write something that's good enough thinking or assuming that my reader is not smart enough to understand. Because that's not my reader's fault. If my reader is not smart enough, it's not my reader's fault. My reader is what my reader is. It's my responsibility to ensure that my reader gets the point. If I can't do that, either I'm not trying hard enough, I'm not expressing well enough, or hey, the possibility does exist that my reader really is not smart enough and not qualified, doesn't have the prerequisite qualification to understand what I'm talking about. What do I do at that point? Well, if my reader of my book doesn't understand what I'm saying, even when I have given my all, everything I've got to express it really crystal clear, then I should not worry about that reader because that's not my audience. My audience is someone who can understand. This is the same here in this speaking, in these lectures. I try very hard, believe me, I do, to say things as best I can. I am really concentrated when I speak to this camera. Just imagine it. I'm talking to a little camera with a green light on it. But I'm not thinking about that. I'm also not thinking about the fact that Maha's talking in my ear. But I'm conscious of it. If something I hear is not right, I can't listen to what he's saying, but I hear when it's breaking up or something. I have to fix it. I don't bother concentrating on the green light, although now I am. Oh my God, what have I done to me? All I can see is that stupid green light. Okay, look at the trees. Trees, help me. But anyway, I'm talking to this camera. But it's not a camera, it's you. Through the eye of that camera, somewhere digitally way out there, are your bodies and consciousness. So that's my audience. So I'm focused on this. And everything I say has to satisfy me that I am really saying something valuable, something significant, something that makes sense, and something that I would not have a problem listening to 5 years from now. I was thinking also today, sorry, I'm just diverting all over the place. I haven't even started the lecture. I haven't even started. I haven't addressed any of these points. Not one. And not only that, but I have another paper, not in these three papers, it's in the kitchen, where I decided how I was going to introduce these topics. I haven't gotten to that either. This is not even the introduction to the lecture. This is just Harry babbling. Harry babble. I'm just babbling. But even though I'm babbling, it really means something to me. Meaningful babble. Well, then obviously it's not babble. Is anything babble? You know, that is a cool question. Is it possible to babble? Okay, here's an experiment you can do. Get a video camera. Sit in a place where you're all alone. This is super great experiment. Point the camera at you and put it on record. And start talking to the camera. Force yourself to babble to the camera, but do not allow you to stop for 15 minutes. Put a timer on. Keep talking. Doesn't matter what you talk about. Keep talking. After 15 minutes, go for a walk. Go eat. Go do whatever you want. When and if you're feeling about like it, listen to it. Watch it. Watch you try to meaninglessly babble. It's very hard to be meaningless. Especially if you have to invest 15 minutes. It can be a long period of time. You will start speaking your heart. Usually, I mean, you can of course not do that, but mainly you will speak your heart to yourself. You will express to the universe something you really need to say. Because there's no fear. You're safe. You're safe because it's you and your camera. You can always delete it. You know that. As you're speaking, you know very well, you can delete it all. By the way, I can't undo something I say here. Whatever I say here becomes part of the permanent record. Even if I don't record it and I don't put it up on harrymedia.net, somebody else will. And I can't avoid it. So I have to be very careful what I say. When I speak, I have to think, am I going to be able to listen to this in 5 years or 5 minutes from now? Do I approve what I'm saying? It's really a challenge sometimes. But you don't have to worry about that when you're doing that experiment with your camera. Okay, you don't have a camera, use a recorder for audio. And just speak. You'll be amazed. You'll be amazed. Now, this is coming closer to what I thought about when I sat down as the questions. Usually I have a difficult time to come up with a unique topic. But today I'm thinking it's about all these topics. And the editing I do, the rewriting, the writing, the expressing. Well, questioning. It's all about questioning. I see that when I don't question, it's very different than when I do question. In other words, there's life without questioning that's based on assumptions. I assume life is like this. And so I act without questioning it. Then there's life with questions. I don't assume very much I mean, there are some things you have to assume. But I question my assumptions. I don't question the assumption that my chair is going to hold me up. At least I didn't question it until my previous chair broke. My father fixed it. But that's another point. I don't question my chair. I don't question my microphone. I don't question the sun. I don't question nature. I don't question air. You know, there are things you don't question. I do question food all the time. What's in this? Where did it come from? Not only that, I question, is it good for me? Is it good for me right now? Does this food go well with that food? What are the long-term consequences of this? Or the pesticides they put on this? Or whatever. Food, I always question. I never make an assumption. It's just the way I am. Technology, I'm always questioning, like, is it going to work or not? But sometimes I assume it is. And when it doesn't, I'm immediately there because in the back of my mind, I don't trust it. I mean, I don't trust any of this stuff we're doing right now. I mean, I don't trust that Maha's going to always be without distortion because, you know, he's on another continent, for God's sakes. I don't trust that my server is going to work all the time. Who knows? It could stop working. I don't trust that my own computer is not going to crash up or something, even though I work really hard to make sure it doesn't happen. So I'm always aware of this. I don't also assume that you're going to accept anything I say. That's a very interesting one. I always question, what do you think about this? I have been very amazed when I see people's reaction when I start to be very truthful. I remember in ISKCON times, I was very rarely truthful. This was very difficult for me because I'm basically a truthful person. But at that time, I learned that people don't want the truth. Like when I'm doing this editing thing, I have a friend here in Gainesville. So he's an English professor at the university down here. So I heard he does professional editing. So I sent him a sample and I said, what are you going to charge me to edit this into something which sparkles? Those were my words. Because, you know, my words can be very utilitarian. I have, my language is quite dull. I mean, from the point of view of flash and interesting ways of using words, not me. No way. I am plain vanilla. Plain vanilla. In my language, I'm plain vanilla. I mean, there are authors out there who use words in such a way, I'm just like, my God, this is genius. Not me. I'm plain vanilla. So if I'm going to try to sell this book, then I'm going to need sparkle. So I wrote to him and I said, I need sparkle. I didn't tell him I'm plain vanilla because, you know, that's kind of like, You're like, what am I going to say? Hey, Bill, here's really dull and boring words. Can you please do something with them? Because then the price will go up. So anyway, I didn't do that. But he wrote me back and he said, you know, I've had problems working with friends before because I have assumed they wanted a professional editor's opinion when actually all they wanted was to be encouraged and supported that what they were doing was good. In other words, they weren't really interested in the truth. They were interested in something else, which they thought they needed. I said, no, I'm interested in the truth. And the reason I'm interested in the truth is not because I don't have faith in what I wrote. Not at all. It's not also that I don't have faith in the way I wrote it, because I'm pretty good at my plain vanilla. I mean, at least my plain vanilla clearly states what I want to state. I want the truth because I want to know, how does he understand me? Now, he's thinking he's going to give me a neutral, unbiased critique on my writing. Now, that's not what I'm looking for, because my writing is my writing. It's not going to get better than this. Maybe he might say that I shouldn't keep using one instead of you or we or us or our. This is a problem when you're making personal development books. How do you relate to who it is we're speaking about or to? Sometimes you need to detach everybody from the concept. Sometimes we have to focus in on us as a group. Sometimes we have to focus in on you as an individual. It depends. I don't think that's a fault. But maybe an editor might, who thinks everything has to be very consistently the same. Editors have a wonderful blindness. They think that when they rewrite something, they make it better. Often, they destroy it. That's another issue. This is a usual conflict between editors and writers. Don't take what I'm saying too seriously. Now, what I'm really looking for is, do you understand what I'm saying? Do these concepts make sense to you? Does your intelligence follow them? Are you able to make what I say better according to what I'm trying to say or not? Can you improve what I'm doing? I'm not asking you to change it. I'm asking you to improve it. The way it's said, not what is said. So that's the test. It's a test. I gave him a test. So it's like very interesting when you ask questions. Yep, here I am. I lost the point again. I got so much involved in that. What is the point, Maha? You forgot it too. It's okay. All right, now, questions. Questioning things. Not assuming anything. Questioning every statement. In writing, it's a very difficult work. In speaking, not so difficult because you can always back up and say, hold on, I didn't mean it like that. Or what I really meant was, you have an opportunity to adjust a person's perception of what you're saying. You can smile while you say something. For example, I can say right here on the camera, you know, you are a complete idiot. And it doesn't feel so bad, because obviously it doesn't mean what I said. Because first of all, you saw my face, unless you're listening on the audio only. But at least you heard the way I said it. It's like what you say to a kid, or it doesn't mean that much. But think about it in writing. You are a complete idiot. Exclamation point. There's no tone. There's no visual. There's no adjustment. It's a statement. It cannot be interpreted. It says exactly what it says. Now then, somebody reads it. What happens? Well, then that person has hundreds of choices how they're going to take that. If they themselves believe that they are complete idiots, they will get completely insulted. How dare you say that? How dare you say that is quite often related to how can you bring up this point about me which hurts me so much inside and has hurted me my entire life, perhaps my previous lifetimes. How dare you say such a thing? It could mean that. Or it could mean when somebody reads, you are a complete idiot, you look at them and say, what the hell are you talking about? What makes me an idiot? You would question it. Like, this makes no sense. First of all, I don't feel like a complete idiot. It doesn't insult me. It just makes me think you're stupid. So then I could write, why did you write that? Please explain yourself. If I write, actually, you're a total idiot yourself, and go stuff your face into a refrigerator. That's not very productive. That's like two kids. You smell. No, you smell. Your mother's boots smell bad. No, your mother's boots smell way more bad than my mother's boots. It's childish. So what a sophisticated person does is says, why did you write it like that? What did you mean? Or now there's a third way to look at it. You take it in the spirit in which it might have been presented as a loving, or shall we say, a frivolous comment. Frivolous. In other words, one says, yeah, I am definitely an idiot. And can you imagine what an idiot you are to have such a friend who's an idiot? You roll with it. Now, the reason why that's good is because, number one, it rolls off you. And number two, it sends back something positive so that if the other person took it negative, they might change their mind. Or if they took it positively, if they meant it in a kind of joking way, you don't create conflict where there is none. In other words, you assume the best. Because how you take what was said depends entirely, and I repeat that, 100% entirely on yourself. How you accept what somebody says to you depends entirely on you and no one else. How you feel about yourself, how you feel about others, how secure you are in yourself, even how you assume things about others, is a reflection of how you feel about yourself. For example, I have cultivated a technique of response. I can get into a big, long discussion about this. I usually assume that any response a person makes is capable of being unique and independent of any other response they have ever made before. Even though we generally have the personality we have and the manner in which we express, we generally have our characteristic format of expression because it's who we are, and our consciousness is a composite of all that has ever been with us. And to a large extent, our responses can be predicted. In other words, because of the way it has been in the past, it could be generally assumed that it's probable the response will be similar. And in most cases, it is more or less. Yet, I like to always add in the possibility that a response will be unique, different than the previous response. Because I always assume the best. Now, I have been often proven wrong. There are some people who just, you know, I don't like them. I don't think they're smart enough to have a discussion with, or capable, qualified, perhaps even emotionally crippled. There are people like that. So I avoid them, or I block them out, or I just, you know, make excuses, or I write very quick answers. Usually, if I write extremely quick answers, like 3 or 4 words, that's not a positive sign. Although maybe I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, the longer my response, yeah, that means the more I'm into it, the more I care, the more I assume the reader will be capable of understanding. Of course, I make mistakes because I'm generally very positive in that sense. I feel that everybody can understand. But sometimes not. It's like assumptions. Like, I might assume that. I assume the best. I assume someone will understand. I assume they will always do something which would be somehow compatible with me or acceptable to me, or because, like, say, if we're friends or we're working together, I assume a certain format of, you know, acceptable positive behavior in a corporation. I have been very disappointed in my life because of that. You know, when you always assume the best, sometimes you get seriously burned when something else happens. And to still maintain the desire to have connections and relationships and work for benefit is a very difficult thing. It's something that really requires a lot of self-surrender. And it also requires not taking yourself so seriously. I mean, after all, why should somebody do what I think they should do? I don't see why. It's only when somebody sees that something is in their interest, then they will agree to do nothing more. When, I mean, anything I've ever said, at least since 1998, is always, always, in consistently, it's like steadily, the foundation basis is, if you see the benefit, if you see there's value, then accept what is being stated in your way, according to what would be helpful to you. I'm not so self-absorbed that I think that everything I say has great value. Well, I think it has value, otherwise I wouldn't say it. Sometimes I think things I say have extraordinary value. Okay, I admit it. Perhaps that's my misunderstanding of it. But I do know that in some lectures or some discussions, I listen to myself hand you the key to every secret that exists in existence. I hand you the key to direct connection to the Supreme. And I'm just thinking, after I say it, I say, you know, do you realize what just happened? Sometimes I look in the audience and I'm like, I look at and I don't see that you caught on. And then sometimes I say, you know, I just handed you the key to everything. And, you know, sometimes it's like, it's like the amazing thing about that kind of truth. It's that if you are not ready for it, I tell it to you, but it doesn't mean anything. That's really interesting. I mean, I find it fascinating. That truth is such an incredibly relative term that unless there's a connection to you, even that which you might call an absolute truth is not at all true to you. And since all of us, you and me and all of us, we judge what is true or not true. We decide it. We say, yes, that's true. Or we say, no, that's not true. It doesn't matter what's true or not true in some higher sense of right or wrong, as in justice and universal power or coming from God. It doesn't matter. That's why we have courts. That's why we have judgment. It's not like this is absolute. It's just somebody who's in a position to judge has judged, and we have to deal with it. We do that with each other all the time. We judge what each person says, we weigh it, and we make a conclusion. When somebody does it as a judge in a courtroom, it's only because two or more people say opposite things, or one wants something from the other. A courtroom judgment situation demands that there's a case. A case means I accuse you of something and I want you to be punished. I want you to pay me money, go to jail, give me back something. Something like that. There's a conflict. That's what courts are for, to resolve that. Or you broke the, or we have the state which says, you broke the law, you should go to jail. That's what court and judgment's all about. Otherwise, in our own lives, we judge all the time what is true, what is not true. We decide. You can't prove something to someone else who doesn't want to understand it, doesn't want to believe it. So why bother? All that has to be ascertained is, what do they want to believe? At that point, you have one of two choices. Actually, you probably have three choices, but there are two choices, amongst many perhaps. You can either stop bothering to prove anything, or you can fake agreeing. Just like the editor was saying, I'll just support you. Now, that may not be faking. It depends. That's also a situation. One could say, I'll fake my support of you simply so you don't make trouble for me, because you don't want to know the truth. Or one could say, what's true or not true is not very important in the overall scheme of things. What is, is. And I support you simply because I support you. Maybe out of love, maybe simply because I feel it's okay what you're doing now. All these possibilities are there. And yet, we will continue to judge in each and every situation, whether to believe or not believe. But in reality, there's no such thing as truth, because ultimately, all that counts to us is what we believe. It is not so important what is true as what we believe to be true. Let's say you have a disease, or let's say even not even a disease. Let's say you believe that you're going to live for another 30 years. You believe it. You know it to be true, deep in your heart. And you walk out the door and get hit by a car and killed the next minute. Now, what was true? Was that belief false? Well, from the point of view of the fact that you just got killed, the idea that you're going to live for 30 years is false, because you died. But does it matter? Would it have been better for you to think, I'm going to die tomorrow? That's true. I don't want to know that I'm going to die tomorrow, because it's going to be the most hellish day of my life. All I'm going to think about all day long is, you know, writing papers about what everybody should do and calling everybody and saying, I love you and I'm sorry. And It's called a bucket list also. What would you do if you knew you were going to die? Write down all the things that you would do if you knew you were going to die, let's say, in a month. People usually put stuff like go to Paris or you know, whatever. Go fly, jump out of an airplane with a parachute. You know, there's a bunch of stuff. It's called a bucket list. And then they generally say, okay, well, you only got a month to live. Go do it. What do you got to lose? Now, in that situation, what's the truth? Is the truth that I'm going to die the essential point? Or is the truth that, hey, I'm going to live the essential point? What truth do I choose to believe? Do I choose to believe death? Or do I choose to believe life? It's like the glass half full, the glass half empty. Do I now choose to think that here is life? I've got this incredible opportunity. This incredible opportunity to do all the things I've always wanted to do without any concern, to go out and have the most fun I ever had in my life. I think that's the truth. And yet, all it really is what I believe. The truth is what I believe it to be. What is stopping me right now from doing that? No one has told me I'm going to die in a month. And yet, do I need them to? In other words, if I have this bucket list of all these things I would do if I knew I was going to die in 1 month, what is stopping me from doing it? Fear of death, fear of not having enough money, fear of injury, and so on. So I'm choosing based on all these conditions. In other words, what I'm really saying is we are the creators of our lives. Whether we assume that to be true or not. Whether we assume or not that we have choice and we have made choices and we have created certain events that we live with, we created our lives. It's a fact that we did it. And if we think that somebody else did it or we're a victim or whatever, it's our belief. We believe it to be true. Because we believe it to be true, it is true for us. Somebody else may look at it and say, not so. But only does it matter, it only matters when we believe it or not. What they say. It's all up to us. It always has been up to us. At no point in time has it ever not been up to us. Because always we can choose at every moment. That's interesting. Whether you believe it or not, it's up to you, because you are the one who believes. You are the one who defines your reality. You want it to be what it is. You have created it so. So accept it. No one's there to judge you. Just accept it. I created this. This is my life. Okay. How can I improve it from this point? How can I do what I'm doing better? How can I be the next one-step version better of what I was? On my way to being what I should be. From my point of view, what do I want you to be? I want you to be that spectacular spiritual leader you are. What does it mean to be a leader? It means to have so much self-confidence that is based on awareness of what you are, sensitivity to what others are, and a deep, intense desire to be of service, that your entire life is a beacon, a lighthouse of spiritual light that other people can take example of, can see clearly within, can feel the energy of, and move towards their clarity, move towards their awareness. Every one of you people have that capacity. And that's all I want. That's my purpose in life. I don't want anything from you. I don't want to tell you what to do or not do. I am not your stamp of approval. I am not your judge. I support you in all circumstances. And all I care about is that you shall be the greatest person you can possibly be as you continually expand step by step in your life, increasing your awareness, increasing your sensitivity, increasing your perception and your connection, your capacity, your power, so that you will be forces of good, forces of positivity in this world, who are ruled by love, not by fear. That's my goal. That's my assumption when I sit down here in front of this camera and look at it. It's my assumption when I write. How can I assist you to become great? I can't do it by telling you what to do. I can only do it by helping you see how to do it. To see where the problems are. To overcome them in yourself. So that you can be a force of good in this world. Because that's the best for you. And that's the best for everyone else. And again, I did not touch one topic on four pieces of paper. So I will file them in my deal with it next week pile, which I got many, many papers in that pile. Okay, well, there were no questions, and I assumed it was because I'm very boring, or that the topic was nothing in particular, which is what I'm going to call this lecture, or it was not very significant. I can accept that. Like I said, it was babble. But I got a question. Only one. So I'll answer it. Okay, but what if somebody doesn't want to be great or to be a leader? What if one likes to be peaceful, simply loving and being loved and happy? Does it mean that such a person doesn't fulfill their destination, their destiny, their goal? Hey, did you hear me say you had to do something? I never said you had to do something. I said you had to be something. I never said you had to do anything. You can be whatever you want to be, wherever you want to be it. But you should be great, because you are. In the sense that you should expand your awareness, your capacity. If you just want to love, let that love flow. If you want to be loved, just accept the love. I never said you should do anything. Nothing in this lecture, which is about nothing in particular, said you should do anything. I hope that answers your question. Okay, here's one of those questions that I would love to edit and take out stuff, but I won't. I'll just bite the bullet and read it. Previously, I was in charge of a zone that was once the world champions of book production and distribution. Can't deny it, it's a fact. What is your purpose now with the books you are writing and would like to publish? Well, that's a good question. Really, my purpose is I would like an opportunity to do this very thing that I do well. I think that when I speak, I'm able to express things in a way which is useful and helpful for people. And by writing it in a written format, if that could be sold through normal outlets, then we would find that, I would find people would appreciate it and would want me to speak more and do more of what I do. I wouldn't mind, trying to do this more. Maybe it's not possible, but at least I should try to. What I feel is important for me is to write down my vision, my way of expressing, regardless if it is accepted or not, regardless if it's a success or not. I just feel that it's important for me to write it down or to speak it so there's a record of it, so that in the future, if maybe perhaps somebody is interested, it is there for them to utilize. And besides that, it makes me feel that I have some possibility to express what's there within. Because if it's just within me and I don't express it, then it's more or less not very valuable for others, not very valuable for me either. It kind of like just is useless. Just like with music also, I like to express, I like to share it. It's just the way I am. I don't think I'm going to save the world. I just think I'm going to contribute to its betterment. I hope that answers the question. And that's the end of the questions. So unless a new question pops up suddenly and unexpectedly, which I doubt very much, I'll say goodbye to you now and hope that you are well and that you all prosper, grow, develop yourselves, accept yourselves, and be that beacon of spiritual love and light that you really are, but that you have covered because of embracing fear, embracing negativity. Kick it out. Deal with life. Be wonderful. And goodbye for this week. As I said last week, there is no broadcast on the 25th. It's Christmas Day here. And I am going to be engaged locally. And goodbye and much love to all of you. Kisses and hugs. And see you the week after, which is, New Year's Day. Okay, I'm going to do a lecture on New Year's Day. I don't have to worry about being hungover. That's never been a worry for me because I don't drink. But if you are hungover, well, tough beans, as they say. And I shall see you then, January 1st, 2011. Woo! Okay, bye. I could say something corny like, see you next year.